I think before we start, oh, you are available. Thank you. Members, the agenda, I think all members have got the agenda in front of them. We have got only two items in our agenda. Is there anyone who can we adopt the agenda as it is? Or do anyone to add on our Bowana?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good day to everybody. Chairperson, I move toward the adoption of the agenda without amendment.
Thank you very much, Honourable One. Are there any... Where is my section? Are there any apologies?
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Thanks, Chair. Only two apologies from Honourable Mugwele and Honourable Mekarikas. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. We accept the apologies as it is.
Thank you very much, Chair. If we are not done by around 25 past 11, I'm going to request to be excused from the meeting. I've got an engagement with the chairperson, national chairperson of the NGO.
No, Tata. Honourable members, can we introduce ourselves into the delegation from the government?
Chairperson, my name is Thabiso, I'm a permanent delegate from the Eastern Cape. I'm a member of this committee. Your secretary is still before 12. Don't say good afternoon.
Modalani Monageli, permanent delegate from Limpopo. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, morning. Bronwyn Engelbrecht, representing Gauteng. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson and colleagues, the ministers. My name is James Mtetwa. I'm coming from KwaZulu-Natal, a whip of the committee.
Good morning, colleagues. My name is George Mtimune. I come from Mpumalanga. I'm a member of this committee.
Thank you. My name is Dumisani Jimbi. I'm chairperson of this committee. Thank you. Permanent delegate from the Western Cape. DM, I think you can introduce your team. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Zoe Kota Fredericks, Deputy Minister of Human Settlements. I would like members of my team to introduce themselves, but before that, I would like to say that the Minister is going to join us soon, and that myself, Chairperson, I will be excused at some point because I've got a cabinet committee where we need to do some presentation at the department.
Good morning, Honourable Chair. Good morning to Honourable members. My name is Mbula Luchana. I'm the Director General of the Department of Human Settlements. I'm accompanied by my colleagues. They will introduce themselves.
Good morning, Chairperson and members of the committee. My name is William Chiana. I'm an Acting Deputy Director General for Strategy and Planning in the Department.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. My name is Sharon Horton and I'm in the Ministry of Human Settlements.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Mili Lehaba. I'm an Assistant to the Director General.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Sean Lanzetti, also from the Office of the Director General. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me welcome the minister. This is civil minister. Thank you very much for availing yourself. Thank you very much. We know you're busy. Thank you, minister. Members, let's not waste any time. Can we allow the minister of human settlement actually just go straight, not a presentation, big presentation for the only for the report on executive undertaking made by the Minister of Human Settlement during the policy debate on the 12th May 2015. Just to tell us not to take top long thing, just straight to the point what's happening in the office and the minister. Thank you very much. Over to the department.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and my apologies for being late. Chairperson, the matter of military veterans is one that has caused us enormous stress for over a long period of time. We are responsible for providing houses in conjunction with military veterans. We provide the standard subsidy of a 40 square meter house and the necessary subsidy that goes with it. However, military veterans are given by the state a house which is 60 square meters, and therefore the difference between the 40 square meters and the 60 square meters is provided to us by the Department of Defense. We do not have a database of military veterans. That database is provided to us by the Department of Military Veterans. We have up to now not had a full database from the military veterans. The military veterans indicated to us that they do not have a database of those people who would benefit, the beneficiaries of military veterans. We have had several discussions with them. We have had a workshop with all military veterans in Birchwood in earlier this year, because we realized that this was becoming a crisis. All along, we had been given the impression that all was well, and we had given several undertakings, because on the day that I arrived in the chamber in the NCOP, the tragedy of yet another military veteran dying in a shack had just happened on that day. I took the opportunity to apologize to military veterans through the NCOP for the fact that so many years after we've been in government, we have not been able to provide military veterans with their houses. The number that had been given to me of outstanding houses was 5,854 houses for military veterans, and we took a decision that morning that we would want to clear this because we produce per year something in the region of 260,000 houses. Therefore, 5,000 houses for priority is not something that would have taken us more than 2 months. We had already had some projects running in several provinces, and we had been assured by the Department of Military Veterans that there was 177 million that they would be giving over to us. Therefore, we were quite certain when we made the promise in the NCOP that this would have been cleared. Unfortunately, one, the military veterans have confirmed finally that they do not have the database. Two, therefore, without the database, they cannot give us the necessary resources. The 177 million that had been ring-fenced that particular year for military veterans was taken back by Treasury from military veterans. We had a meeting at Birchwood with all the military veterans, outstanding military veterans. At that time, we had already established a task team comprising of the chief director here, DDG, the chief of the task team, DDG Giane, and a number of people to assist us to get over this hurdle, which keeps recurring. And that task team consists of people from the Department of Military Veterans and consists of ourselves as well. As we speak, we do not have a final database from the Department of Military Veterans. We have had a meeting with the Deputy Minister of Military Veterans, at which I made the proposal that he hands over the responsibility of military, of housing for military veterans, to the Department of Human Settlements. And he agreed. He said he was out of his depth because within the military, he is unable to make the headway that is required because they operate very differently from a classical department of government. That agreement remains in writing. I have made several overtures and through the deputy minister to say we would like to take over that responsibility. I'm here to say that we sincerely are apologetic about the situation we find ourselves in, to request you to support my plea that we take over the responsibility entirely of giving houses to military veterans, that we request Treasury to ring-fence the money that is given to military veterans for housing and that is diverted to human settlements. In that way, it will not take us more than 2 months to complete the backlog. We have, in the meantime, taken on the responsibilities, I think, Dimension Data. We've taken on the responsibilities of Dimension Data. We had to short-circuit the process. Fortunately, the Dimension Data was on the database of Treasury to provide us with a database so that we are able to conclude this. In short, this is what has been the biggest problem. The second problem is the fact that one of the reasons why the Department of Military Veterans is unable to get a database is because when we negotiated the legislation, we talked about all military veterans. In my view, when I was in my first stint as housing minister, I was talking about the non-statutory military veterans when we first put together this legislation, because these are the people who were the most indigent, most in need of resources, most in need of housing. In the Western Cape, we have handed over houses to military veterans, but the military veterans in the Western Cape are those people who served in the SANDF, not necessarily those who have not had the advantage of having been employed and having had a salary. That is something that we will still deal with through the military veterans and through SAMVA, whom I'm seeing tomorrow, to make this proposal that we prioritize non-statutory forces, because these are the people who actually have not worked, have not had the opportunity to provide themselves with a house, and therefore, in my view, would warrant to be prioritized. If the law that we have around the definition of a military veteran includes those people who served in statutory forces, either in Venda or in Transkei or in the then South Africa, those are people who were employed, those are people who did have resources, and those are people that I would not put as the first line of providing houses. I have been invited to a military veterans summit, SAMVA summit, tomorrow in Bloemfontein. I intend to put this proposal to them. My request through you is please allow us, please support us to take over this responsibility entirely and ask Treasury to divert to the resources for this to human settlements. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. Thanks a lot. Members, if you want any questions or seek clarity from the Minister, thank you very much. Honorable Engelberg.
Mr. J, thank you. And Minister, thank you very much for that explanation. Just one thing that I'm battling to understand. You spoke about a figure of 5,850 housing that was outstanding. And then you also spoke about a figure of 177 million that was provided to the department to build these houses. The question that I have, why you had the money, you had the figure of 5,850 outstanding houses, why wasn't that done? Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Minister, I think you would agree with me, with the greatest of respect, it's really problematic for us to hear after 20 years of democracy that really nothing is done by the department in respect of providing housing for military, for our military members, especially the non-statutory ones, which did not have the luxury of earning a salary in any way in their previous lives. And you make in your presentation reference to the fact that you do not have a database for military veterans. What makes it difficult to get such database from the Department of Military Veterans? Because I take it then, if you do not have a database, then you cannot have your planning properly. And in essence, for the lack of better word, it means the health department does not have any plans for housing military veterans whatsoever because of the lack of database.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Minister, for that presentation. On the issue of the database, I just want to check, I mean, you are talking about sort of a final, complete database that is not yet available. My question is whether don't you have some database, no, that you can, in the meantime, be working from? Are you saying completely there's nothing? That is the first question. My second question is in terms of your engagement with the military veterans, the department. Are they willing, are they keen to work together with you in terms of how you want to approach this matter? Are they keen to want to transfer what they are supposed to be doing to the department, or are they reluctant so that we are able to understand how to intervene in terms of whatever decisions we may have to take at this level? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm sorry, the very first question that was asked, I'll have to come back to because I missed that as I was trying to scribble. Why is it that nothing has been done for military veterans? We have built houses for military veterans. What we're dealing with now is that figure that we brought here, because when we looked at it, we thought it is a figure that we can complete in 2 months when you gauge the number of units that we built. We have built houses for military veterans. We've built houses in the Eastern Cape. We've built houses in every province. The Deputy Minister is responsible for overseeing this. We have built houses. But we have not built houses at the rate at which we should be building them, at the rate at which we had committed ourselves. Because the number of 5,000 is a number that had been given to us by the Department of Military Veterans, and it is something that we can clear in the shortest possible time. In fact, if anything that is a kind of thing that would give this government, that would give our department the highest accolade possible, we would have wanted to do that. It is possible, and we have encountered in the process the problem of the verification of who is a military veteran, because we cannot give a subsidy until we verify who these people are. We have a number, and the number is given to us by the Department of Military Veterans, but there is no verification of those persons that are entitled to that. And the Deputy Minister of Military Veterans has explained to me why it has been difficult all this time to get the necessary database, and there is no way that I would be in a position to intervene in that sphere. Hence my request that we take over this responsibility. Therefore, I would like to indicate that it would not be correct for the record to say nothing has been done for military veterans. Nothing has been done at the pace at which we should have done it. It is indeed 23 years down the line, and I want to indicate to you that it was in our term, it was in my first term in 2004, that we took up this responsibility, because I myself am a military veteran. When I got into this post, one of the first things I wanted to do was to make sure that we can provide military veterans with houses. The policy dates in our time. We do care, and we are concerned that up to now nothing has been done. Within the first 2 years of our engagement with military veterans, the biggest problem we had was the definition of the size of the house. We suggested to them that we give them the size of house that we provide as the Department of Human Settlements, and they can increase the size of the house from any subsidy they get from the Department of Military Veterans, which had not at that point been established. You've got to understand that the Department of Defense does not deal with the needs of military veterans. It was only when the Department of Military Veterans was established in 2010 by law that we were able to put this into our planning and make sure that we're able to provide. So we've been held back also by processes that require legislation, processes that require policy. And therefore, to the answer that nothing has been done, a great deal has been done, but it does not give us, it does not put us in a good light, because we have had these problems. What makes it difficult for DMV to have a database? Because the Department of Military Veterans is a new department, and it does not have the capacity. Up to now, they do not have the capacity to do what they're required to do. That's the bottom line. Hence our request that we take over this responsibility. There was a question about database not being available.
No, I just wanted to check whether on that one, are you saying completely there's nothing?
No, there is. We're working on what we get from those that we're able to verify. For instance, we have been able to provide. So what makes you think that I have good eyes like you? This is not fair. Chairperson, do you want to see what they've given me in my department? That's not right. Can you see it? So far, for the year 2017-2018, in the Eastern Cape, we had 88 houses approved, and so far we've provided 34. Am I correct? Yeah. And in the Free State, we have 199, and in the second quarter, we've provided 44 houses. In Gauteng, we have provided between the two quarters, 58. In KwaZulu-Natal, we provided 9. We're talking about this current financial year. So we have been providing houses for military veterans on the basis of the database that we have. But it is not the entirety of the database. If we had the entirety of the database, this could be cleared in 2 months completely. And that is what we had hoped to do. But we have been providing. In total, we have provided 136 within this year, 136 houses in this year alone. But that is too slow for people who are aging and have been waiting for so long for houses. Chairperson, I don't know if I have answered all the questions.
I think you did.
Mr. Chair, thank you. The Minister mentioned that she didn't hear my question. And Minister, thank you. My question was that you were given the figure of 5,850 houses outstanding, and you did have the amount of 177 million that was ring-fenced to build these houses. So my question, my original question was, if you could explain why this was never done, seeing that you did have the number and you did have the money. And then added to that, if I look at the figures that you've given us, you've built 136 units in the past year, and if you could just maybe give us what the outstanding or the applications were of that, and then seen in the light of the fact that you had so many approvals or many requests, why weren't more built? Because you did have the money. Thank you, Chair.
We have the number of 5,000 and something as a indicative number given to us by the Department of Military Veterans. None of them were verifiable and approved. That is why when you have the table in front of you, it indicates how many were verified, approved and verified. We also did have a problem within our own system because we did not have the necessary instrument to get into the database of military veterans of our system accepting some of the applications for military veterans. They were rejected by our system. We have since taken a decision that the minister will override the requirements of the HSS. And so that one will have been overcome. And the lack of working together with the Department of Military Veterans has delayed quite a lot of what it is that we would have been able to provide. However, if we centralize this, is the grand total 4,900? Yeah, the total is 4,900. If we have permission to take over this responsibility, we will finish it within the first two quarters of next year.
Minister, Honorable Timonye.
Chair, the minister makes reference to the issue of verification, and I know for the fact that the Department of Military Veterans itself does verification of military veterans, and you say you are doing it again. Is it not duplication? Is it also not waste of time and resources when we should be delivering houses and leave the verification to military veterans department itself?
You know, before we build a house, we've got to make sure that in our system it is approved, because we cannot build a house without it going through the HSS, which is our own verification system. We're given the number, and we are not certain whether or not these are people who actually qualify to get a house in terms of our own regulations. We have now taken a decision that we will override that particular verification and have a deviation so that our own input into our system is not rejected by our system. Let me give you an example. If, for instance, a military veteran, and this is something we still have to discuss with yourself, if a military veteran had been employed, had earned a salary that is more than what is defined in our HSS system, and we put their names in there, it would naturally be rejected. Are you with me? So what we've done is we have now overridden the fact, the criteria that is there for approval of housing, which is what we do normally, to ensure that we can bypass some of the problems that we've had in having military veterans approved within our system. Now we have dimension data, and I'm not sure how we're going to do it, but we're going to make sure that there is an immediate override over the requirements that are put in place by the Department of Human Settlements through their DHS.
Just to add to what Minister has outlined, you may find that there's a military veteran who received a house in 1999 when we were still building 33 square meter houses. And that military veteran wants to be deregistered now because we're building 50 square meter units. The system will kick that military veteran out immediately. But also in terms of the policy that DMV has outlined, the qualifying military veterans should earn less than 120,000.
25,000 per annum. Minister will not qualify for a house, but minister will be in the database of all the military veterans that we have gathered. For instance, we have a figure of about 16,000 if you consider everyone. The 4,900 is those who qualify. Some of them are statutory, so the statutory figure is about 1,400. But in that statutory, sorry, the non-statutory figure, the destitutes, those that we refer to as destitutes, is about 1,400. But when you put it into the HSS system, which is our system, you will find that a lot of them get kicked out because some have received houses in the past. When we verify with Home Affairs and we look at the ID, they get kicked out. So we'll ask for that deviation that Minister has talked about. So the answer is, we're not starting from ground zero, but there are teething problems in terms of verifying the data. DMV will not know who has qualified before and who has not qualified. They simply give us the data, 4,900, but we then have to go into our own system to check who has received the house and who has not received the house before. So that's the challenge that we're faced with. There is a slide that we wanted to present, but we won't present it. We presented it to the military veterans themselves in Beirut, where we show where the military veterans are throughout the country by province in terms of the DMV database. We also showed where our projects are. We have a project within a 10-kilometer radius of where military veterans reside, which shows exactly that if Minister has her way, we can wipe out that backlog within 1 year, because at any given point in time, we have a human settlements project active in every province, in every municipality. So we wanted to check if we can accommodate the 4,900 within the current landing project, even if they get the 40 square meter house and just extend it at a later stage. Minister made that proposal to DMV. But let's accommodate the military veteran in current running projects. But we then ran into trouble with the database. We ran into trouble with some of the coordination issues between ourselves and DMV. I wanted to clarify another point, Minister, about the budget. The unit cost for a 50 square meter house is about 180,000 if you exclude the geotech variances and other things. The top up from DMV is about 78,000. The 110,000 is paid by ourselves, by human settlements. So for every unit we build, DMV has to top up by about 78,000. And you may find that we're running a budget of 18 billion rand as human settlements, and DMV has an amount of about 178 million. So which means, therefore, that we may not be able to build that 50 square meter unit for everyone because of budget constraints within DMV, which is why we made a proposal that let's accommodate them in our running projects. But what we also need to take into account, Minister, this is my last comment, is that the military veterans themselves, especially those who are not working, they don't want to be passive recipients of these units. They want to be active in building their own units. In Chetty, we have cooperatives. They bring their own companies, they bring their own laborers to build those units. And that process can be very slow sometimes. But we need to accommodate them. Those who want to build houses for themselves and they want to get economic opportunities, we encourage them to do so. But that process can be very slow. Thank you, Minister.
Chairperson, we took a decision that we're going to take over the running of Chetty. Chetty was going to provide 491 houses for military veterans, and the sword turning was done about 2 years ago, and they've only built five houses up to now. 22. No, that's a failure. No, that's a because we also have to take into account that once we've given a project to people, there are the internal dynamics. And when we got to the launch of the four houses that were complete, we discovered that the differences were between statutory and non-statutory, between various political parties, something that we had not considered. And the squabbles between them were quite quite deep. And therefore, we've taken a decision that we're not going to allow them to build their houses. We will build our houses because we can build them without the personal dynamics that go on between them. Chetty has proved to us that it is not working. But at that time, we thought it would be a working idea because it would give them the skill. They would be registered as a company that is able to provide houses, and beyond building houses for themselves, could take part in the economy and be a credible construction company, but it hasn't happened. I think they haven't got over the spirit of fighting, and it goes on between them. The amount of 177 DG, is that not the one that was returned to Treasury? There is an amount that was returned last year, an amount of 177 or 190. Something was returned to Treasury because it was not used, which is what makes us feel that if it was directed to us, it was directly given to us, we would have been able to use that money. And when you're dealing with military veterans, it's not only the criteria the DG has indicated of having benefited before. Sometimes people wait and get to the point where the primary beneficiary has passed on. And we have to find a way of overriding the system so that the family home is built and the children of the primary beneficiary are able to get a house. But that is not catered for in the policies of military veterans. In military veterans, it is the military veteran who benefits. In our case, we would like to make sure that it is the children as well who benefit. So if we centralize all of this, we would move much faster in delivery.
Thank you very much. Another question
about that? Mr. Chair, thank you. And thank you, Minister. It seems to be a complex challenge that you seem to have on your hands. What I would like to just confirm from you is what criteria will you be using to override the system? Because you've spoken about previous beneficiaries and people benefiting. So if I can just have clarification in terms of that, and how are you going to prevent people from getting double benefits and people who aren't really military veterans to benefit? So that's part of the criteria. That was the first question. And then secondly, you've spoken about Chetty and about the original 490 outstanding housing units that had to be built and only four were built. Can you just please clarify whether any financial incentives or any tender money was provided to them to build those 490, or did they only get the incentives once the four were built? If you could just maybe clarify how that worked. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Anna.
Jefferson, my question is only one. Because as much as the minister explained, I'm covered when she is mentioning the family because of the incident in Lusikisiki of those people of 1916 Most of them have died, but their families are still suffering. My question now is Jefferson to you. The petition that you are talking about, those people are not verified. That's the only thing I wanted to understand. Because in terms of the explanation, the people who are struggling for the apartheid, most of them were not gone for peace soldiers. Most of them, they could manage to be exercised. Most of them, they suffered directly, like what happened in the Transkei, in terms of the massacres in Moza, right in Sikisiki. So, to me, I wanted a more, because I wanted to support this thing of division, so that those people in the rural areas can have a small beneficiation, because the rural people doesn't need large amounts of money of beneficiation, just an appreciation of a roof on top of their families. That's what I want, the question that I wanted to put. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Minister. Thanks.
May I start with the last question first? When we established the Department of Military Veterans, I was Minister of Defense at that time. We had to put into legislation because no resources can be ceded to a department unless there is a founding legislation for that particular department. This was done in 2007. We only concluded the legislation for military veterans in 2011. It took this government, this parliament, 4 years to pass the legislation. One of those reasons is, what is the definition of a military veteran? The honorable member indicates that she has concerns about people who fought colonial struggles in Nosa in the Transkei and continuously overlooked. But in the 4 years that we were discussing everything and it took us so long, when we established this department, it didn't occur to us it would take so long for the legislation to be passed by Parliament, because we all thought everybody understands that how destitute our military veterans were. And before we passed that legislation, we were not able to do anything or even build a single house. Finally, after deliberation in Parliament, a military veteran is defined as any South African citizen who A, rendered military service to any of the military organizations, statutory and non-statutory, which were involved on all sides of the South African Liberation War from 1960 to 1994. Served in the Union of Defence Force before 1961, or became a member of the new South African Defence Force after 1994. Now, what we might want to do is go back to amend the definition of a military veteran. Because the people who were considered as military veterans before 1960, 1961 are only those who served in the Union Defence Force. Otherwise, anybody else would have been considered from 1960 serving in a recognized liberation movement. I don't know, Honourable Member, if the people that we're talking about in Nosa were serving in a recognized military liberation movement or whether these were wars of resistance. We might want to get back to that and see that we amend that, because unfortunately, for as long as military veteran is defined in this way, what you're raising falls outside a recognized military veteran and a recognized liberation movement. But a very valid point, and perhaps it was timely that we had this discussion and get back to what it is that has caused us so much delay. The law has caused us so much delay, will continue to cause us so much delay in the way that it has been put together. What we can do, purely because we are a caring government, is to find a way in which those people, because they qualify, because they are indigent, of encouraging a PHP approach where they build their own houses and we provide them with the necessary subsidy for that. Perhaps the Honourable Member can assist us in identifying those groups. But in the meantime, I would urge that we relook at the definition and amend it. There was a question before that one. Oh, yeah, DG, Honourable Member, I just deal with the high-level language and I leave the specifications of how things are done, the technicalities, to the DG. So I'll ask the DG to respond to whether or not there were any benefits that were given or incentives given for people who are building 491 jetty?
We approved the subsidies, Minister. The province approved the subsidies.
The dating now is answering Ms. Honorable Pracht. Through you, Chairperson, I wanted a specific understanding that the people who put the grievance to us as petitioners are amongst the people that are not identified as they can benefit in the human settlement. Because I'm analyzing the explanation of the whole content of the department. So to us as the people who are listening and were petitioned, I wanted to understand through you that whether those people petitioned to have human settlement, are they qualifying or not? Because I don't want us to drive as if we're oversighting the department. We're not oversighting the department, but we're looking for a specific practice that's supposed to be done by the department. Thank you.
No, Chairperson, I think I misunderstood. No, the people that the Honourable Member is talking about are not within the definition currently of military veterans. I am therefore suggesting that perhaps we could revisit the definition and amend the legislation. But in the meantime, there is a way that the Department of Human Settlements can assist those people by virtue of their being indigent, and therefore be able to provide them with some kind of subsidy and assistance. But the full benefits that you're talking about, which you think are, which they believe are due to them, they are not in the legislation. Because the legislation only recognizes liberation movements, recognizes liberation movements, and in the annexure of the legislation, the liberation movements themselves are itemized. The incidents you're talking about is incidents of people who were involved in the colonial struggle, and that we did not put in our legislation. That is what caused us so much harm in our discussion. But unfortunately, the cutoff date was in 1960 when the ANC formally established the MK. And before that, the only people who were considered before 1960 are those who were in the Union Defence Force. So that issue that you're talking about falls between those two cracks. My suggestion is we put a proposal that it is amended for future, but for now we can offer some kind of remedy for that desperate situation.
Thank you, my Minister, for that. Because what I wanted, so that as a committee we don't delay to reply to the people, so that we support them going forward. That's why I wanted this specific answer, because I don't want to sit here as if we are oversighting the department. We are just trying to assist the petitioners who have brought the petition to us. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. The Chetty project, that project is categorized as a PHP project. PHP means People House Process Program, which is one of our policies or our programs. But there are two types of it. There is a managed PHP, there's a traditional PHP. So this one is a managed PHP. There is an association of beneficiaries. In this case, it's called Microsoft Co-op, if you like. They appoint by law and through the police, they are allowed to appoint their own contractor or their own developer. So they have appointed contractors. In fact, they have appointed, if my memory serves me well, three different contractors. They had a problem with the first one, and then they fired the first contractor, and then they appointed another one. So they will then be assisted to source the material from the material suppliers, which is what HDA has done. They help them to source the material so that they can pay the contractor.
And if you understand the costing in human settlements or in housing in particular, 70% is material supply, and then the other cost goes into other things. So we've helped them so that they are able to pay material suppliers, they are able to pay laborers, and they are able to pay the contractors within the subsidy quantum. In fact, they were complaining that the subsidy quantum is too small and it needs to be reviewed because it has never been reviewed since 2012. So they were of the view that maybe minister at some point will have to review the quantum upwards because the margins are very small. So we don't pay incentives, we pay for the work done. We pay the contractors, we pay the laborers, we pay for material supply, and that is accounted for. We can make that information available through HDA.
To continue, I am not too keen to increase the quantum. People must understand we now live in peace and they haven't stopped fighting. Taken them 4 years to build these houses because they still have a warlike attitude, and we have indicated to them that they have to solve this problem because their children somewhere who need to have accommodation. But there was another question that was asked: how do we override the system and make sure that there is no cheating? There is a task team that has been established. And when there is a query and a need to override, the task team will have investigated the matter, and by the time I am required to override, we will have investigated that this person has not previously been a beneficiary, is not cheating the system, and we would need to find a way that is done before we have an override over the system that we have established for checking that we are not, there is nobody who's double dipping or cheating the system.
Thank you very much, Minister. Let me thank you for coming and avail yourself in your busy schedule. Thank you very much for coming, Minister. Thanks again.
Thank you, Chairperson. Do I walk away assured that you'll support that we take over the responsibility of military veterans' housing? Because it is the most embarrassing thing to encounter in our society, that people who have fought for our liberation still do not have housing. And these technicalities we're talking about now, they don't understand. All they want is just decent life like everybody else.
Thank you, Minister. Fortunately, there is the Chairperson of Security and Justice, also the Chairperson of Military Veterans, Honorable Tim, when he's listening. You have to assist. Thank you very much, Minister. Thanks a lot. Thanks. Let me welcome the Minister of Health. Thank you very much, Minister, for coming also. You're most welcome. Minister, I don't want to waste your time. I know that you are very busy. Well, I'll just ask you to respond on a report of consideration of a progress report on executive undertaking you made on the 7th of May 2015. Just, Minister, just to highlight to the committee how far is it. Thank you very much. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Maybe as a background, I would like to mention that at the time this undertaking was made, as you can see, it's more than 2 years, we were going through load shedding in the country. If you remember the Eskom load shedding. And at that time, we have tried to negotiate with Eskom that when they do their load shedding, they must exempt hospitals from load shedding, and Eskom said no. When they do load shedding, they do it to everybody, regardless of whether they are hospitals or not. So you can imagine the crisis that we faced with. Ordinarily, hospitals must have standby generator in case something happens to the electricity. But this one was not something, it was a big issue where Eskom delivered electricity off for many hours on end. So we suddenly were exposed, and the issue was how many generators are there and how many extra are needed to deal with load shedding. But you remember that since that time, load shedding abated, but we still wanted, yeah, so to put up the generator. The second thing I want to mention, which is always my weakness, I'm not sure whether the parting weight of the minister was something to that effect. Because at the national level, many of you have given us or believe we are responsible for anything that happens within our portfolios. But in health, because it's a concurrent function, and I suspect the minister was explaining the same thing, on issues that matter, they are purely provincial. One, human resource issues are purely provincial. Procurement are all provincial. Financial management are all provincial. Maintenance of equipment and infrastructure are provincial. That's where our problems start. Because all I did when I left it was to implore the provinces to insist that they must all get generators. At the national level, we even put up a team, which was doing an audit, a team of engineers. The audit was not the headcount, was to go and examine the generators, see that if lights are off, this one can carry the hospital for so long. You know, it can carry everything, or it can carry only certain parts of the hospital for so long. It needs so much diesel in that period, etc., etc. That's what the audit was all about. Once the audit is complete, the job of ordering and installing does no longer fall in me, depends on the province. And the speed with which that happens depends on the provincial procurement mechanism. So I wanted to give that background. But having said so, as it is at the present moment, the hospitals that were in question was, number one, the national hospital in Bloemfontein. It presently has got two generators. They have ordered two generators, and they will complete the installation by March 2018, which means they'll have a total of four generators. My suspicion, as I said, is that their procurement mechanisms were very slow, but they were no longer under pressure as we are, because there's no whole load shedding in South Africa. So the generators are really just standby. That's why maybe they didn't rush like that. Bilinomi Hospital, which is quite a fairly big hospital, has got seven generators. All of them are old. Time and again, they do cause problems. They've ordered seven new ones, which are meaning they are replacing. They are not going to have a total of 14. They'll have still have a total of seven, because they are replacing all the old ones. And the installation of these seven new ones will be completed by the end of December. That will be next month. Then Universitas Hospital, they've got five generators. All five are being reconditioned, but they are busy. Sorry, they've ordered two new ones. They've already installed them, and they finished by October this year. So they've got a total of seven. Fort England Hospital in the Eastern Cape has got six. There's no need for new generators, so they still have the six, which have got sufficient capacity. PZ Mayor Hospital, also in Eastern Cape, has got one. They didn't order anything. There's no need for one. The one they're having has got existing sufficient capacity, because it's a very small hospital. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister. Members, any questions of clarity or whatever from the Minister? Honourable one.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me turn the input. My question is, for these that are still old and are need to be like Peronome, where we were in Free State, My question is, how is the national government, how do they link with the authorities in the provinces so that these discrepancies can be fixed or can be repaired before us even going there? Because what happened in Pironomi, even the officials there, they were saying that they've been long trying to get the assistance from national about these issues. So my question now, what strategy does the national department have to monitor these things at the provinces? Thank you.
Other member? Thank you.
Ask for more clarity. What assistance were they talking about? The assistance from national?
When we're doing
too long for them to get assistance.
Yes.
Yes, what were they talking about?
About the Pironomi, the apparatus, these generators in Pironomi.
Yes, what assistance? When they say they are waiting for assistance from national.
I don't know. That's why I'm not sure whether they were talking about the procurement or they were talking about the service provider coming from national. I don't know.
Yes.
No, Chairperson, this is exactly what I was talking about. Quite often when provinces are in trouble, they say national. That's why in August, I went to the Portfolio Committee and say Parliament must look into this issue. Health is supposed to be a concurrent function. And I'll give you a background. They were asking me with the background of what happened in the country, which is a big issue. Life is the main, which you are listening to every day. And then the oncology issue in KZN. They were asking Minister, are these problems happening because health is a concurrent function? My answer to the Portfolio Committee was that it would have been better if all the functions in health were concurrent, because I'll come in. But all these problems you are experiencing are happening because four main issues that are the pillars of the healthcare system are not concurrent. They are purely provincial. That's human resources, meaning whoever is the CEO of a hospital or an HOD or the doctors, the nurses, they are purely provincial function, budgeted there and decided there, sometimes with their premier. Secondly, is financial management. Financial management, money from the treasury that moves straight into a provincial treasury, and the executive council then decides who gets what. Thirdly, is procurement. Procurement, what to buy and when. If you look at Life is Demand, it was a procurement issue. We've got a contract, and it's a lot of money, we want to save money. You know? Right. Procurement. The last one is maintenance of equipment and infrastructure. It's also purely provincial. These are the cornerstones of the healthcare system. If you listen to all the complaints about health from patients and the public, if you analyze them, they eventually come to these four and nothing else. But yet these four are pure provincial functions. But then when there's a problem, the responsibility is with the minister. I even asked the president, I said, you know, this system is giving me responsibility without authority. You are carrying responsibility without authority. Yes. There's no authority that we have. So all I can do to control the system that we have got what you call an NHC, National Health Council. This is a statutory body, the National Health Council, in terms of the National Health Act, which is chaired by me as the minister. All the MDCs come with their HODs. That's number one. Number two, the South African Military Health Services, the Surgeon General, that means the head of South African Military Health Services. Because you know the military has got its own health services, running Fort Tracker 1, and, you know, all these big military hospitals. So they meet, they are under the Minister of Defense, but there are doctors there and nurses and all that. So they form part of the National Health Council. Lastly, SALGA, because some big metros like Cape Metro, Johannesburg Metro, Itegwini, they do run clinics. So SALGA is represented in that council and it's statutory. That's the only structure where I've got access to these provinces where they report. So when load shedding started, we brought this matter after ESCOM told us straight that they are not going to save hospitals. If they decide that we are doing load shedding in this area, they mean everybody. Yeah, no, they said the whole hospital, and then they said they are aware that the act, the law says there must be standby generators or the police. Then I said no, standby generators are there for an accident, for a short period of time. They said no, but we are not going to save hospitals. I then, because the National Health Council takes place 4 times a year, statutory, we have to meet 4 times a year. So in one of the meetings, I then told them that we are in trouble, comrade. We are in trouble. Because if ESCOM is saying this, it means we must be self-sufficient on generators. It means the ones we have got may no longer be able to carry this thing. You know, so we need to start buying more generators. The council agreed. Then we said we must put up a team which goes to assess from province to province to do an audit. And I said that audit is not head counting. It's to go and assess whether if ESCOM switches off electricity for 24 hours, can these generators carry the hospital? Can they carry the whole of it or carry only particular sections, etc., etc.? So we started doing this. Some hospitals even took an extra step to put up what is called UPFs, an interrupted power supply, UPS, an interrupted power supply, where they said areas like theater, ICU, they must put this uninterrupted supply, which are battery operated, so that if the generator fails, they can kick in also. So that's what this assessment was doing. And then once the assessment is done and they said, we think your capacity is too low, you need 2 more generators. Now, unfortunately, at that juncture, it has to be done by the province because the money is there with them. The procurement is there, it's not mine. The installation is usually done with public works departments, many of whom, it's not a secret. I don't know whether when the NCO2 was in the Free State, when was it? Was it September? Was it August? When you were in the Free State, you might remember that the NEC stood up angry. I even said to pray. Angrily said, when people were asking him about clinics that are not doing well, he said, it's because they are built by public works. Because in the Free State, the NEC fought to get out of public works. Because it's not a secret, most public works departments starting from national are dysfunctional. Yes. They'll get angry if I say so, but this happens to be the truth. But when a clinic is not built, nobody asks the Minister of Public Works or the NEC. It's all of public works. It's always health. Same thing as in education. So the NEC has just fought to take over that function to health. And guess what? Guess what? At the end of the financial year in March, Free State was number one in terms of infrastructure expenditure. It was number one. When he was complaining, it's because his premier has just told him he wants him to take it back to public works, where it has already failed and delayed. And that's why he was complaining in public, because he knew he's been set up for failure. Yeah. I'm happy and celebrating because after he protested, it looks like he was left alone. Maybe it with a good strategy by shouting public. But then, as I'm saying, then it was going to be public works. Can they order these things for us and install them and all that in provinces where the function is given to public works? So as I'm saying, I don't know what help they are looking for. Because once we have assessed and tell them how many they need, the purchasing, maybe let me put it in very clear terms. This is an issue of tender. Who gets the tender? Who gets that contract? And you know, I can't be involved in that.
Thank you. very much, Minister. Thank you very much. Honourable Engelberg.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Minister, thank you very much, and I'd like to, from the onset, just congratulate you on your incredible passion for the people and for the sick people of this country. And I applaud you for that. But saying that and looking at the reason why you were actually called to appear in front of us was exactly the fact that the provinces aren't taking accountability. And it seems to be that the only accountability or the only way in which one can get that is through the National Health Council and the Regional Health Council. My question to you is, how do you suggest we change the system so that there's increased accountability to the provinces? Because that is where the challenge lies. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Chairperson, I proposed two issues to the portfolio committee because this was becoming too much. And it was also more or less in focus. Number one, if nothing changes, that means if this country doesn't change the laws, if it doesn't, but take into consideration that even with life is demanding, if you look at the recommendation, one of them is that we need to change the National Health Act. Because the Umbas then discovered that there is this lacuna about the ministry. Remember, he asked the MEC, the then MEC, did you tell the minister before doing this? She said, I didn't have to. Because we are a CEO of government with our own powers. I'm trying to explain to you the problems. So the Umbas picked all that and said the National Health Act must change, must be reviewed to solve this problem. Secondly, because it was like this demand, he said the Mental Health Act must also change. Why did he say so? Because before 2002, the Minister of Health had the responsibility of mental health in the country, delivered. But after the 2002 Act, Parliament gave that responsibility to provinces. The authority to province, yes. The Act that was passed in 2002. So the Umbat was saying it needs to be reviewed. Then I told the Portfolio Committee that in the NHI white paper, we're trying to show these weaknesses and how they get reviewed. But I said, even under the present system, if you want it to work, it's no longer a use to call the minister who comes here tomorrow. You must call the premiers. Because in the National Health Council, when you discuss these issues with the MECs, they just tell you it's my premier. He has given that this thing must be handled this way. It's my executive council. They've taken a ruling. You understand what I mean? So then the minister must come here, answer what? So I said, Portfolio Committee, please do call the premiers. Because as long as they don't feel the heat, it's the minister who's always mentioned when there's failure. Why should they correct anything? Because it's not their names there. It's me. And I'm coming here in front of you to mourn. So I said they must be called at times. In other words, when something in health did not happen in the province, call the premier, not only the minister of the MEC. Call him and say, Premier, you are in charge here. Remember that I also don't appoint MECs or even HODs. So they know, even if I sit in the National Health Council, they know this man can't fire me. He can't charge me. He can't do anything. He's just going to talk. Either I cooperate or I don't. That's all. But I thought with Parliament, we'll be first to cooperate. Then the Portfolio Committee said, oh my God, there's no mechanism in the law for the Portfolio Committee to call premiers. Only NCOP can. Yes. Only NCOP has got that power. They then promised that they will meet with the Select Committee. Because, and I even told them, if you want the healthcare system to improve, when you go to do oversight, forget about all these other things. Do oversight on only four things. Forget about anything else. Do oversight on HR. Do oversight on financial management. Do oversight on procurement. Do oversight on maintenance of equipment and infrastructure. If you win there, I can tell you, you have dealt with the healthcare system in the country. But all these four, the people who hold the power are the premiers. They then elect committee to see how, but obviously because it was only in August when I was telling them this. Let me tell you why I told them this. As this problem started piling up, in 2015, I put up a team of people who ran the healthcare system very efficiently in the past, who have retired. It was Professor Green Thompson, who was the first HOD for health in KZN. It was Professor Gray Housel, who has just retired here in the Western Cape. He's the longest serving public servant. He served for 19 years as an HOD. Firstly in the Free State, then here in the Western Cape. He's retired now. Then I got Ralph Mukijima, who was the first HOD in Gauteng and also became chairperson of the Public Service Commission. I went to SARS because there are procurement issues here. I got Al Karim, who is the boss of procurement in SARS. I went to Treasury, I got Nomvula Marawa, who was the technical advisor in Treasury. I put them together. I gave them a list of 100 hospitals and said, I always get problems, either from the media or from the public or members of parliament about these hospitals. Go ahead and see what happens. They visited 25 and came back and said, Minister, we don't think we must continue. They had not yet visited Western Cape, they had not yet visited Gauteng, they had not yet visited Northwest. They were still left with those. But they said, Minister, from the 6 provinces, we got the answer. We don't think we must visit the remaining 3. We got the answer. The answer, the problem is not inside the hospitals. We are wasting time there. The problem is in the provincial government. That's where you need to go and solve the problems. Right there at the province, in the headquarters. You can do whatever in the hospitals, you'll get nothing. Then I said, what are the problems? They came with this form. They said, these are in the provincial department, where in some hospitals, you find that the CEO does not even have the delegation, a delegated authority to repair a window. When a window breaks, they said, no, the delegated authority, the function belongs to public works. It has even gone together with the budget. That's what they told me. And that's why I brought that report to the portfolio committee. I handed it over to them and said, you see, this is where the problem is with the healthcare system. And when you do oversight, don't be all over the place. Do this form, because the committee has told me so. But also, Chairperson, I was very happy because what the committee did was spot on. Since 2013, I'm attending ministerial leadership courses at Harvard University in the U.S. Harvard has started those courses for ministers of health in Africa, in the Far East, in the Caribbean and Latin America. As you can see, they choose the underdeveloped part of the world. They don't do it in Europe or America. They bring us there to help us in health leadership. I've been attending. In 2015, they establish a Harvard global health unit. And the unit said, in order to help ministers from this part, we need to know what is their problem. They went to do a sort of a research. What are the common features of a healthcare system that is not doing well? Whether it's in Africa, the Far East, you find healthcare systems that are not doing well. What do they share in common, even when they are in different continents? And to my surprise, they came with 3 things. They said the first one is human resources. Yes. If they, yes. The second one is procurement. The third one is supply chain. In their case, they took, you know, in our case, we usually say procurement stroke supply chain. In the case of Harvard, they took the best different systems. When I asked them, they said, no, sometimes in all these poor areas, you are able to procure, but you fail to supply along the chain. You find that a clinic has got no medicine. Not because the country ran out of medicine, but the supply chain from one command structure to the other is failing. That's why they put it procurement through supply chain. Now, I am saying, if you look at that report from Harvard and look at the report from these 5 eminent people, they look very identical. That's why I had the audacity to come to Portfolio Committee on Health and say, look, we no longer need to investigate anything. This is as clear, you know, as daylight, that the problem lies in this form. And in all four of them, it doesn't matter how many how many national health councils I call. You should tell the MEC that, no, this is wrong, do it this way. They'll tell the minister, you have to speak to my premier on this issue. He took the decision, or the executive council then. That's why I openly told the portfolio committee, please don't summon me alone. Summon the people who have got the authority, because all I'm having is the responsibility, which is unfair. The authority lies elsewhere. Then the portfolio committee discovered, oh, they don't have an authority to, yes, to bring them here is you in the NCOP. And I don't ever remember you summoning a single premier since 1994. I don't remember that. It has never happened. So why should they feel a need to change anything if they know very well that whatever decision they take, somebody else is going to answer, not them? You know, but NCOP has never, you know, even when you debate in the NCOP, they sometimes just send MECs and never come. Yeah. And yes, and you do nothing. They sometimes send MECs. I've debated then budget petition. I've seen you calling over provinces, you know what has happened. Now, that system must change. Now, that's the first one. I'm saying even under the present laws, as long as you don't summon them, you'll never solve many of these problems. To say whether in your province this and that is happening, on infrastructure, on procurement and all that, and here the way the problems are. The second is obviously to change the laws, as the Umbat said. When we were developing the white paper on NHI, we discovered that 12 acts must be amended if NHI is going to be national. Remember, we call it national health, universal health coverage. National. If it's going to have the word national, 12 acts must change. Because the manner in which they are, it's not going to be national. And among those 12 acts is our relationship with provinces on these issues. But that is long term. The present tense, don't summon MECs or me alone. Summon the people with authority, please. Then you'll get to the bottom of these problems.
Thank you very much, Minister. I think we also learned something from you. You help us a lot. Really, what we are talking about, I never saw any premier in our. No. They sent MECs, we are quite good. Thank you very much, Minister.
Can you avoid that as the ones who hire HODs?
Yes.
Yes. When you ask an MEC that, no, but you, because some of the people, you know, I'm sorry, I have to mention indirectly. Some of the people you know because they are in the healthcare system, you get from MEC. We know this person. You want to make this person an HOD. It's within the system, we know how they perform. They said, unfortunately, my premier wants this person. My premier wants this person. And there's nothing I can do. Sorry? Of course, I don't know why NCOP is not leading. When Limpopo was in trouble in 2011, you remember we put them under administration. I was part of that team under Section 100. The Minister of Justice was there. The Minister of Public Service Administration, it was still the Minister who had just left, Minister Zulu. The Minister of Justice was Minister Jeff Harden. The Minister of Finance who was leading this was Minister Praveen Gordhan. The Minister of Basic Education, Public Works, Roads and Transport, and myself. Guess what happened? We immediately discovered when we arrived there that four HODs must go if we correct the situation. And we discovered with shock that none of us have authority to get those HODs to go, only the Premier. Only the Premier could suspend them and get rid of them. And I remember at that time he said no. And we were in trouble right from the beginning. So we took responsibility, but we had no authority. Because thereafter, because there was Section 100, anything that happened, it's now the ministers who are in charge. But here you are, you are in charge, you know that this person must go for this situation to improve. but we have got no authority to get rid of that person.
Yes.
We discovered in Section 100. That's why when people call for Section 100 now, I said, oh, please, it's not going to solve your problem. Because the people who have got authority will still be the ones who are there. All you are giving us is the responsibility. That's all.
Mama, all functions.
To suggest the way forward, man. And given what we benefited from the minister now, and also previously earlier on the, from the Minister of Human Settlement, I don't know if we can, perhaps in the new year, suggest a joint sitting of the committees, the portfolio committee on this province national concurrent functioning portfolio committees and select committees, and find a common way of dealing with it, perhaps find so that this kind of dealing with these issues that are concurrent functions can also find expression in the rules of parliament, so that we can be able to really get down to the bottom of these issues. And at the same time, I know we have to respond to the petition in this particular space, but I need also to request the minister's office to input on the report of the select committee in respect of issues that need to be addressed. Because our job as also activist parliament is not only to make legislation, it's also to make interventions where it's necessary. That is what I regard as parliament of activism. I think in the new year we need to think about that. Perhaps the first meeting should be between the chairs of these relevant committees, which both portfolio and select, which have got responsibility of oversight on concurrent functions between province, national, and local government, so that we really find a way and a common ground of dealing with issues.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Thank you.
I don't think the matter is, as I'm saying, we need to change certain acts. There's no question about it. But I'm saying, even within the present situation, you can improve things if you call people who are responsible, who have got authority. That's where the problem lies, because we have never done so for the past 23 years. We have always called those who are apparently responsible, but those who hold the authority have never been brought here to the committee. And they believe maybe they are even above it. Yes, why should they?
No other fund?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I do agree with the minister. I want to say to the minister, thank you. You know, whenever you talk to whoever talks, Chair, in the new year, if we want to make a move about this, the first thing was call all the premiers. Because there was an issue that I heard that one HOD was having, was not good for him. And he told the MEC, you cannot do that. I am hired by the premiers through what I do. The minister. So if we want to make a move of this whole thing, we must have, if we call a joint meeting like the Honorable is saying, then the premiers must also come. All nine premiers must come and say, we don't call, then we can call the HODs and the MEC afterwards, but the premiers must not come.
Thank you, Honorable. Our intention. Are you back?
Yeah.
Can you just give a vote of thanks to the minister, please?
Baba Mzere, sifisa ukubonga baba ukuthi noma wawungekho ngalela langa kodwa namhlanje ube khona wasebelisa. Siyabonga kakhulu baba.
You minister, we know that you are busy. Thanks a lot.
I'm sure because we are presently here in SADC, I'm sure you know, that the ministers of SADC were here for their annual meeting and annual malaria day, and they were in Limpopo because we're here. You are aware that I couldn't have left them, I was the host. Thank you.
Honourable members, thank you very much for availing yourself to make this meeting perfect like this.
the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.